Hi, my name is Carlos M. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Carlos.
And I want to thank the committee and the conference for the opportunity to come out here and share with you guys my experience, strength, and hope. I want to thank Dan, too, for his kindness. And, you know, I was not the most diligent about keeping up on the schedule for signing up and doing all this stuff. So he really took care of me. So thank you. That's very kind. I always say that it's through the kindness of the people that in Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been afforded to remain here all these years. So, and I love coming to Laguna. Laguna always reminds me of the great, tranny in the sky, Miss Bobby Ballesteros. You know, for those of you who didn't know Miss Bobby was this big Mexican tranny. She looked like the female woolly mammoth in Ice Age, except for the elephant trunk, but she was Mexican, so she might have had a trunk. I didn't want to know about that, though. And she was in the rooms when I first came around. I got sober in Long Beach, and I used to think, oh, who is this bitch, you know? Is this being recorded? Do I have to? Well, I cuss a lot, so I hope I won't cuss. Can I cuss? All right, well, I know. I always say nobody comes to AA because they're singing really loud in the church choir. When they come, it's because there's some crap, you know? And like I said, I got sober in Long Beach, and I got sober. My sobriety date is October 19, 1991. I've been sober for 21 years, 6 months, and a week. It's by the grace of God and the love of many people and many rooms that I've been afforded to stay here. I got sober when I was 25 years old, and I'm also a drug addict. I'm a tweaker from the Inland Empire. I know, I'm not supposed to say that. When I got sober, we were not allowed to say that, you know. The old-timers were very serious about that, and they would get on us, and they'd be like, you can't say that, and blah, 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 and I'd be like, all right, and, you know, and but I respect the traditions, and, you know, and I always tell you, if I have to identify, if you want to share, and now I have to be the one that tells the queens, I'm sorry, sweetie, you have to state your disease if you want to share. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a very democratic organization. Nonetheless, you must comply. And, you know, and alcoholics are not really good about compliance, you know. It's not one of our qualities. And I can't believe I have to speak for 45 minutes. I wasn't nervous until I came here. And I also want to thank my husband for driving me. You know, my little husband is so good to me. He takes care of everything. He makes sure that we stay on track. He shops for me. He does all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I always tell him, oh, you should have seen what the other husbands were like when I was really young and pretty. But, you know... And drunk, you know, because it doesn't matter. Like, that's why, you know, it doesn't matter if you're really pretty or if you're really not. You know, people get tired of your shit when you're a drunk. After a while, they're like, you got to get out of here, you know. But I want to thank him. You know, he's definitely something that it's happened to me unexpectedly. And, you know, that it's just, you know, I don't know what to tell people. You know, it's summer is going to be 10 years, and Miss Marcy is here, and we met at her wedding. There I was sitting at another lesbian wedding, and I was thinking to myself, these fucking lesbians are always getting married. And I was like, damn it. And it was like for Marcy's wedding, she was my sobriety sister at the time. We had so much work because we put all together. And, you know, my sponsor is fabulous. My sponsor, his name is David M. And I have the best sponsor. And if you don't have the best sponsor in AA, get another one, you know. Because, you know, it's just the way it is. And he told, well, Queens, you know, we have to put it together for Miss Marcy. And I was like, what? We had to work and all this stuff. And there I was sitting at another lesbian wedding. And I was like talking to God. And I was like, God, you know, I'm sick of these lesbian weddings. You know, I want to go to a boy wedding. And I was like, preferably mine, you know. And then I saw him, and I was like, ooh, wait a minute, come here, I'm going to tell you a story, you know, and there we were, you know, I had about 11 years at the time, and he was kind of new, but that's another story. So anyway, and like I said, I guess I have a lot of time. I can't believe I have to speak for 45 minutes. I can't even hear myself for 45 minutes. You know, I'm so sick of myself. But I will do my best to tell you about the miracle that Alcoholics Anonymous has rendered in my life, you know, and why I love the greatest spiritual community that, you know, I have ever seen, you know. And this is a spiritual movement, you know. This is not self-help. This is not therapy. There's no Kool-Aid to drink. I always tell people, if you want what we have, then you have to do what we do. It's that simple. If you want what we have, you have to do what we do. And what is it that we have? Because that was a very important question, especially when I was new, because as you can tell, I'm mellowed out in my old age, but I was really kind of not, you know, sunshine was not beaming out of my ass when I first got here. I always been a doubter, you know, and I always been a non-joiner, and I always been, you know, extraordinarily afraid of everything, you know. Ever since I was a child, I do believe that my alcoholism is in the, you know, disproportionate amount of fear that I respond to situations in life. You know, and ever since I was a child, you know, I was like that. I mean, there's pictures to prove it now, you know. I wouldn't get in the pool. I wouldn't join any games. I wouldn't do anything. I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. It's not going to happen. And hence, you know, but in spite of that, here I am, you know, 21 years later and almost, you know, almost completely functional. So almost, yeah, I mean, which is amazing. But going back to that question about what is it that we have, and people get very confused, and sometimes people leave us because they do not get what they want. And they think that there is something to get here, and all there is to get here is sobriety, you know, and the capacity to deal with life on life's terms, you know. And for that, you know, I will do whatever I need to do. I will give back to whatever I have to give. I will sponsor queens I really don't like, you know. And lesbians too, I'll sponsor lesbians, you know. You know, that's true, you know. But anyway, so I'll tell you a little bit about myself, so what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So what it was like, I come from a long line of crazy people and drunks. I'm originally from Nicaragua, from Central America. My great-grandfather died of alcoholism, you know, and left my grandmother and her five brothers, you know, basically destitute, because my grandfather was a little bit of he had a little bit of money, and he made the big capital mistake of marrying beneath his station, which in Latin America back in the, you know, a couple centuries ago was not done. And so there was already drama, and my grandmother was, you know, very effective in raising the rest of her family. I had a lot of love in my family, too. I mean, on the other side of my family, my mother, you know, there's lots of fucking crazy people in there, too, and drunks. But you know, my mother had 14 brothers and sisters, so there was a lot of people around my growing up. You know, my daddy liked to drink and chase the ladies, you know, and my mom liked to take pills and chase him, you know. And it was in the 70s, so, I mean, and in Latin America, so she was taking everything, every pill under the sky, and, you know, and I would be like, you know, and my mother was beautiful, you know, and she was beautiful when she was young, you know, and she was, I was always in tow with her. But what happened, what that did for me is that it gave me a lot of bad ideas about what love is and what relationships are, you know, and how things are supposed to be. Another thing that happened is I knew early on that I was a little different. I was a really, I know it's hard to imagine, but I was a very Nelly child, you know. And much to the chagrin of my daddy, because my daddy is a very macho man, and there I was, you know, just hearing Ariel's, you know, siren song in my head, you know, la 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 la, ever since I can imagine, you know. And you know, in my family, they would be like, family parties, and, you know, and there'd be food and be drinking and there'd be dancing salsa, and all the kids would be dancing in the middle of the adults, and they will get money from the adults. And I always thought, say, that my daddy would give me money so I would sit down, because I'd be twirling in there with all the other, you know. And then there was like the whole other, you know, womanizing thing. So I was already upset with my daddy when I got here. And it's important in my story because I was like, okay, daddy, I made my first alcoholic decision based on fear, which is that, okay, you don't like me? Well, I'm not going to like you too. And then, you know, I'm truly, you know, there's nothing like a resentment for an alcoholic. You know, people will remember shit from when they were little. But in the middle, you know, I also had an older brother and I had two little sisters. And then my mother, you know, because of her own alcoholism and taking pills, you know, she manifested, you know, mental illness and she's a manic depressive bipolar. You know, my mother took to her bed when I was 10. So there I was in that house when I was 10. And there's my two little sisters and my brother the older brother, the asshole, who also didn't like Queens, and I was like, well, fuck it, you know, and there I was, you know, and my daddy was always gone, you know, or coming home drunk, you know, parking in the lawn, and I'd be like, oh, these fucking people make me nervous, you know. So, you know, I was like ready for something, you know, and then I always said, then we had a big war in my country, and thank God they put me on a plane, and I came over here and I was like, oh, thank fucking God, you know. And when I was like 15, and I came to live with one of my aunts, but my aunt was also pretty rough, and, you know, so it was never like easy, you know. So long story short of the whole thing was that I was ready for a drink, you know, since I was little. And my first drunk actually was back home because, I mean, you could drink whatever you want. And, you know, I would, my first drunk was, you know, with my little sister. We sat down, we had drinks, and I had set up a little table and blah, blah, blah. And one of my father's business associates had brought us some of that kosher wine. Now, why would some Latin boy from Nicaragua get drunk on kosher wine for the first time? It's beyond me. But that's what happened, you know, because it was sweet. I thought it was apple, you know, I thought it was grape juice. And I was like, I made my little sister drink, and now she's a Catholic nun. I used to terrorize my sister. And I tell her, I said, gosh, if I would have known you were going to be a nun, I would have been a little nicer to you. But, you know, but anyway, so then I became a teenager, you know, and I was in the 80s, and I loved the 80s. Thank God for the 80s, because, you know, we could wear eyeliner in the 80s. And, you know, and I was like, you know, I wasn't out, and I was like, you know, and I would be running around the school in all kinds of pseudo drag, you know, and nobody would kill me, you know, but at the same time, you know, I was very mischievous too. I would always be like, you know, sleeping with girls, you know, and that was very weird. I'm the only gay guy. A lot of gay guys get very squeamish about sleeping with women. I slept with a lot, you know, and then I would just do it because I like doing bad things. And they'd be like, bitch, aren't you gay? And I'd be like, yeah, but let's just do it, you know. And that's just always the way I've been. I'd be like, come on, girl, just, you know, and then, you know, in the middle of it, I'd be like, all right, let's go have some beer, you know. I used to love to drink, you know, the peppermint schnapps. I mean, it was, in that time, I lived in Ontario, California, good old Ontario, and it was like nothing there, but there was a gay night at the roller ring, and so we were like gay teenage children, you know, and we were like drinking in the parking lot and be like, we're going to go to gay night. A couple of times we showed up and it was the wrong night, you know. And it was just like nobody had to teach me the bad stuff. You know, I used to complain a lot during my sobriety, because one of the things that happened about getting here when I was 25 is I have to grow up sober. It's been really rough, you know. And I used to complain to, like I said, David is my sponsor, but for a while I was under the loving care of my grand sponsor, because my current sponsor was having a marriage outside of this state, so she had to move because. He turned out to be a lesbian too, you know. He made somebody and he's off, you know. Because we do that too, you know. People don't like to talk about that, but it happens. You know, we are quick into getting into relationships at times, you know. Where was I? I lost myself in that for a minute. I was a teenager drunk. I never had to get anybody teach me the bad stuff. You know, people complain a lot in AA. They're like, well, I didn't get this and I didn't get that and my parents didn't teach me this and my parents didn't teach me that. You know, well, nobody had to teach me the bad stuff. You know, and my grand sponsor told me one time, well, nobody taught you how to fucking do bad things, but you learn, because that's how I am. I'm a good alcoholic. If there's something in it for me somewhere that I think that I can get, they don't even have to articulate it. I'm like, got it, you know. You know, I will be back here, you know. So that's the way it was. You know, I met all the other sad children in school because that's what happens, you know. I remember one of my best friend's mother, my friend Karen Hayter. Her mother was she was another shut-in like mine. And, you know, Karen was one of my best friends, and I never met her mother because she was in this room that nobody was allowed to go in, except we would go in there and we would steal her pot and her cocaine. And then I remember when we were out of high school, like a couple years later, Karen's mother died, and I remember clearly thinking to myself, oh, that's going to happen to me too. That's going to be my life. I am going to live like that, a shut-in. You know, and one day I'm going to just die in my room. And I already was okay with that. So there was no problem for me to tell him, you know, thinking that's going to be the future for me. I had no plans of anything, you know, grand happening. But God had a better plan for me. You know, God had a better plan for me. So what happened is, you know, and it was like, you know, I was just telling I got to be careful with those stories sometimes because, you know, not that the boyfriend is like a saint, but, you know, I remember we used to come over here to drink, and there used to be a park over here, and it was a cruisy park back in those days, and I took off with some man. He took me to his house, and I think about it now, I'm like, God, Queen, good luck nobody killed you. Because I was like a little guy. I was like 120 pounds, and I'm like 18 or 19. Then some guy took me to his house over here, and he wouldn't take me home for like 3 days. And when I showed up back home, this is before cell phones on the internet. My friends were so mad at me. I love disappearing. I love blackouts. I love drinking and waking up with no panties. I love it. I love it, you know. I love it when the curtains go like this. Boom, you know, and then you're off, and then you come to, and then you're like doing something bad, and people are upset. Usually, I always say, you know, my alcoholism is like Jurassic Park. It always starts really cute with the car and the little music, and going by the, you know, and then the fucking T-Rex gets out, you know, and, you know, and then people are screaming and running, you know, people. And they would always be screaming and running. And I would be like, I'm just like a little guy. Why are you guys so upset? Just have a drink. Have a little line. What is the problem? You know? But anyway, so, and then I met this guy, you know, this older guy. You know, he was in his 30s. And I was terrorizing him. I know. Isn't that gross? I mean, I was terrorizing him at the time. And then in 1991, what happened was that we went to go get tested. We had been together for about a year. And then he tested HIV positive, and I tested HIV negative. Because by circumstance, you know, it's just, well, I don't want to get into the mechanics of how that happened. But, you know, but that's what happened. So he was like, you have to get sober because you're a pain in the ass and you're always blah, blah. I would always be disappearing. I love disappearing acts. And I thought to myself, oh, shit, you know. And in that time, everybody was dying, you know. Everybody was dying. And it was really kind of serious. So it kind of went like, whoa, this is a problem. And what happened is I was living in Torrance at the time. And I called my friend Sandy, this wonderful lesbian. I know I talk a lot about the lesbians. I love the lesbians, you know. I adore them. They've been my shelter in this program, you know. I always tell people, you know, it's hard because it was hard for me to have male friends, you know, when I was new and when I was young. So I called my friend Sandy, and she lived in San Fernando Valley. And she got in her car, and she came to get me, and we went to a meeting. And now she tells me this story because I forgot that part, that we went to the first place and they were not there. And I thought, okay, we tried. We can go back to the boyfriend and say, we tried, baby. They were not there. Get off my ass, you know. But she was a good AA, and she had a directory, and she was like, oh, no, queen, hold on. And she said, we're going to go here. So we went to the meeting at the Alano Club when it was on 4th and Broadway. And there I met the good people of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I thought to myself, what do these people have here? You know, you guys had a light that I had not seen for a long time, because, you see, by that time, I was already living like a young animal. I mean, I didn't come, in spite of all the chaos in my family, you know, my father doesn't even say bad words. You know, it was like I was brought up proper. I went to private schools. You know, there was a lot of, I wasn't ghetto, but I loved it. You know, like I said, I was already living like an animal. My daddy would come visit me, and he would come to my house, and there would be like garbage and people in there that nobody knew. I didn't even know half of the time who the hell these people were. And my daddy would tell me, son, what is going on with you? What's happening here? But I knew that the biggest punishment I can give you is silence. And I'd be like, nothing, daddy. There's nothing going on, you know. So anyway, I went to the meeting, and there I found the people that, you know, were nice to me. And I always tell people when I speak that it's critical that you read the literature. It's critical that you read Miss Big Book, and it's critical that you read the 12 and 12, and it's critical that you find out what is that twist that happens before you relapse. It says that there is a twist in our thinking that happens before you take the first drink. You have to know what that is so you can sound the alarm, and you can tell us, you know, when you're like, there's something really wrong, I'm getting ready to get the hell out. But, you know, but if you don't tell us, then, you know, we won't know, because nobody has a crystal ball. But like I said, people were there, and they were nice to me, and they were so nice to me, like Miss Bobby and Gary and Manny and all these people. I know who those people are. I can tell you who were the nice people to me. I cannot tell you who were my resentments, you know. And then I went to go to meetings, and I was going to meetings in Redondo Beach. And then there were like a bunch of lesbians in Redondo Beach too. And then I met my best friend, Miss Jules, you know. And she was my first friend in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, she saved my life, because when I relapsed, when I had 90 days, she was the only person that I told. And, you know, and she let me have it, because she was like, you know, queen, she's like, you don't have any respect for your physical sobriety. She taught me how to have respect for my physical sobriety. She taught me that my sobriety, my physical sobriety, is something to take care of. It's not something to be taken for granted. It's not something to, like, now people, like, you know, throughout the time that people have asked me to sponsor them and this and that, and they're like, well, what do you think about this and what do you think about that? Can we do it with people who are getting high? Can I hang out with people who are drinking wine? And I'm like, I don't know, honey. You know, you just have to know what your limits are, but you have to respect your sobriety, and, you know, you got to watch your hole. You know, I said, and they were like, what do you mean? I said, because nothing is going to jump into your mouth or in anywhere, any other orifice of your body, unless you allow that to happen. So it's your job to watch it, you know. But anyway, so Miss Jules, I went to a meeting, and I was sitting there, and then she became my friend. We just became friends, you know, and that's how it happened, you know. And then when I was almost a year sober, I got bored. I was in Long Beach, and I was like, fuck this, I'm moving to Los Angeles. And I went to Los Angeles, and it was so hard. And I got over there, and it's so funny, Michael is from the class of 91, you know, and I remember he was in West Hollywood, and all these West Hollywood queens that would be like, oh, hi, girl, blah, 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 and I'd be like, fuck these bitches. And I'm sure they would say things like, oh, what's your name? But I would hear it would be like, do you speak English, you know? And I was like, what? So I was very defensive, you know, I was very defensive. I was a very defensive child, you know, it was almost impossible. And the only person who got through all that stuff, you know, because defensiveness and overall shittiness is just a sign of fear. You know. Now I know. Like, now I tell people, when people are acting up like that means that there's something wrong. you know, so I became friends, and I became friends with the people that were like a couple years less than me, more so than my same time of sobriety, because the people thought I was new. So I was like, well, you know, but I wasn't. And my sponsor was like, I am going to be your sponsor now. And I was like, what? But I was like, okay, I'll try, you know, and he's been so instrumental in teaching me how to be a nice man. You know, I'm a nice man now. And, you know, there I also, I went to the AT Center, and I met my first two sponsees there. You know, I met, I remember walking down the steps on the AT Center, and there was this queen in all, you know, in Versace. And all Versace, everything. And I was like, who is this fucking queen? And then I found out, I was like, and that was when, like, in like, 93, when there were, like, the big Medusa heads things and going on. And she had Medusa heads everywhere. And I was like, and she was a little brown, too. And I was like, who are you? And he was like, blah, 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 my name is Marshall. And then I was like, oh, God. And then he was in a recovery house. I didn't know she had gone to jail for stealing people's credit cards. That's how he was able to afford those nice clothes. Because I was like, how does this bitch got better clothes than me, you know? But it was like, there was a story. There's always a story, you know. That's what I learned. And then I met my other little friend that became my sponsee, you know, and we started running around. And then, you know, I didn't know I was not supposed to become friends with these guys, but they became my friends, you know. And, you know, and service and sponsoring people has always been a huge part of my story. You know, I always told people, you know, if you want to get out of yourself, help people. It says that in the big book, that says that if you have problems with sex, go help people. You know, it doesn't say stop. It doesn't say do this. It doesn't say to do that. It says that God alone is the judge of our conduct. The main thing that we have to figure out is if this, you know, behavior is selfish or not. So I started helping people. And besides, my sponsor was not having it. He was like, you have to sponsor people, queen. And I was like, God. But, you know, it's really helped me, you know, and it's really helped me. And then when I was like 5 years sober, in the middle of all that, you know, I was also like, I met some little guy. I had this little boyfriend, this little French bitch that I was going out with. He was horrible, you know. He was really mean and condescending, and he made fun of my family. But, you know, I loved him. And you know how it is. And then, like, and then he went, you know, and then he applied to go back to school back east. And, you know, I'm so stupid, I even helped him pack. And, you know, after that, U-Haul left and then drove off. And I was, like, left in this big cloud of dirt and leaves and everything going like this. I kept thinking to myself, I wonder if this is over. It was over. It was really over. You know, although for 2 more years, you know, I kept trying. You know, it's like, you know, trying to CPR a dead horse, you know, and he would come over here and all that stuff, and, you know, I'd be like, oh no. And then, you know, and it was really hard, you know, because I was young, and it was really hard to deal with that. And then all my sponsees got drunk. All my little bitches I was sponsoring, I went home 1 year, and they all got drunk. And I was like, oh, great, I'm an abysmal failure. But, you know, I didn't know, like, with Bill W., the founder of our program, you know, there was some guy that even killed himself in his house. And that didn't deter him from trying. He kept saying, I'm sober. You know, and I went home, and it was really hard. My mother was in a really dark depression, and she laid in bed for 10 days that I was there. And I came back, and I didn't want to drink, but I wanted to, like, kill myself. And I was like, this is really bad. Because I still thought that God was Santa Claus. And I thought, if I'm a good little boy, then, you know, he's going to give me everything that I want. But God is not Santa Claus, you know. So it was, you know, and that happened, you know. But the point is that I didn't go out, you know. I kept trying, you know. And I had to go back and seek outside help. And another little thing happened a few years after that, you know, when I was about 8 or 9. That's when things got really dark during that time. And then, of course, my sponsor came back, and he was like, you know, gung-ho about everything. And we started doing a big book at his house every week, and, you know, that's what we did. And then something came up, which I had talked about when I first got sober, which is, you know, on top of all my other trickery, I also like stealing people's money. And I had told him about how I'd stolen all this money from this man that I worked for when I was a young guy. I'd stolen like $40,000 from this guy. I know, I was a little thief. I was so horrible. And I was like, and then he was like, you know what, Queen? You have to go back and you have to go pay that man. And I was like, what? I was like, see, I knew it was a bad idea to tell you all my shit. And then, you know, I was like, no, that's not going to work. And then him and my sponsor, my grand sponsor, my great grand sponsor, they all ganged up on me. And they were like, oh, you have to go pay that man. And I was like, well, I'm having difficulty locating him. And my sponsor was like, and my sponsor is a hairdresser. And he was like, I used to call him like on Saturdays because it was all about me all the time. And I didn't even think, oh, he might be busy today. It might not be a good day to call. And then, and I'd be like, I can't find him. And he'd be like, well, if he was a piece of ass, you sure would find him. And he was like, click, and hang up. And I was like, fuck. And then I was like, okay. And then I looked and I said, you know, I looked up the statute of limitation on embezzlement and it's open-ended. So I don't know if this is a really good idea. And he was like, well, don't worry, Queen. We'll bring you cigarette money. You'll get yourself a man. And I was like, oh, this is really atrocious. But, you know, at that point, I already had run out of ideas of what I thought would bring me happiness. And he talks about that in step 8, that alcoholics are really good about exploring every idea we think will bring us happiness, except doing those things which will build character. I didn't know what those things meant. But, you know, but then when I started, and then I went and I found this guy, and I went to go, and I said, you know, I have to give you money. I used to steal money from you when I worked from him. At first, he didn't want to see me, and I did. And he said, like, bring cash. Don't be trying to write him no check. And I was like, and I had $100 in my pocket, and I was like, well, I'll be willing to go do it. But I tell you, my conversation with God in that car when I drove from Los Angeles to Long Beach was, okay, God, I am going to go do this because I have run out of good ideas again. But if I get in trouble, this will be where I will draw the line on the sand. I will depart from Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will break contact with all these bitches. Because if I get in trouble, I am not going to be happy about it. But I'm willing to do it. I'll be like, I'm willing to do it. And I share that only with you because I always tell people, it doesn't matter what you think or what you feel. What you do is what makes the difference. You know, that's the thing that's always been Chinese for me. It's like, I can't think my way into feeling differently. I have to act my way into feeling differently. You guys have been telling me that for 8 or 9 years, but I didn't know what that meant. You know, so I went there and I talked to this man for like 2 hours. And then he was like, no, I knew that you were already taking money. I said that was fine. And then he asked me what I had been doing. And he was like, oh, you're doing really well. And then he was like, oh, why don't we go into business together? And he wanted to write me a check. But then I thought to myself, oh, if I show up with a check, you know, thinking I'm clever, I was like, David is just gonna wring my neck like a top. And I was like, I better not do that. And besides, you know, I always say I didn't really want to be in business with this man because I was already, you know, my life had taken a different direction, you know. But what that really taught me, and I was crying when I went back home because it really made me realize that no matter what I think, God always has a better plan for me. And that's where sober experience is so important. You know, when people say that it's not important to stay sober and time doesn't matter, they're full of crap. Because what happens, my experience has been that things take time. You know, and there's things that take 5 years or 10 years or 15 years or 20 years for to them to be revealed. Because, you know, it's a slow process. You know, it's a slow process. The people that get everything and they're going around telling everybody how it should be and what they should be doing and all this stuff, they need to go to Al-Anon. You know, I always tell them, honey, we have a sister program, you know. But it's always a little scary because, I mean, so I did that. And, you know, and that changed my life again. It's like, you know, I had to start all over again. That was when I was about, you know, 9 or 10. And then, you know, then I started sponsoring other people effectively. I was in the bedevilments during that time. You know, it talks about the bedevilments. Where is it, Michael? It's in, you know, it's like, you know, when you, you know, can't help anybody effectively, you know, we don't know how to deal with life. It's, I think it's in How It Works, you know. Those are the bedevilments. And what it talks about doing is it's doing more step work, you know. And there was another thing that happened, too, during that time is, you know, when my grandmother died when I was about 3 years sober and I called my father and I told him his mother was dead, I felt something that felt like happiness in my heart. And I told my sponsor about that, and I was like, David, you know, I think that I'm a fucking monster, because, you know, I thought I was, I mean, I adore my grandmother, but yet that, you know, made me feel really bad. And he said, well, honey, you have to do more step work. And I had to go do the other amends, you know, the other amends with my daddy. You know, my daddy was my biggest amend, because I had to go back home, and I had to be like, I had on my little chicken shit list, and I had to be like, Daddy, I'm really sorry that I was resentful with you because you didn't like it when I was a little queen. You drove my mother crazy. You were a drunk. You know, the litany of crap. And the first time I did that, my daddy got drunk in the car with me. He threw up out of the one of the doors. You know, and it had to be put on hold, everything. And I came back and I was like, well, I was like, that amends was an abysmal failure. It did not work. But what happens is that I always tell people when I work with them, anything that causes you pain is the crumbs that lead towards the house where God lives. I said, the witch doesn't live there. I said, God lives there. Anything that's pain, I said, is going to be, it's your path. It's not something to be, you know, and alcoholics don't like pain. I mean, we're pleasure seekers. I only like things that feel good. You know, that's how I ended up, you know, I just lost like 30 pounds because I discovered ice cream a few years ago. And I was like, oh, this shit is really good, you know. So anyway, so that's been, you know, and I had to do that with my daddy again, and I had to make amends, and I had to make amends with my brother and this and that. And then, you know, things change. And then, you know, I plugged back into the program, and then, you know, I met Jason, and then, you know, we just, my life was different after that because I was different, you know, and things continue to change, you know, and that's been my experience with the amends, you know. And just a couple years ago, my father, a few years ago, my daddy, I think when he turned, it was about 5 years ago when he turned 75, you know, his sister was still, I have two aunts that live here, and I was like, he wanted to come see him. And, you know, my daddy, as a result of his own alcoholism and my mother's mental illness, did not prepare well for their old age. You know, it's kind of chaos. But he wanted to come here, and now I'm a grown-up. So I'm like, it's okay, Daddy. I'll come. I'll bring you back over here. And I sent for him, and we had a party, and we had a little carne asada at my house. And he was here, and he loved my, you know, and he was talking to my little boyfriend, and everything was cool. You know, and then, you know, and I just did that. I did what you guys have taught me to do, is just to show up, just act better than you feel, just do the right thing. You know, it doesn't matter how you think or how you feel, just do the right thing. And, you know, and then he went back home, and then I realized that I had an uncovered resentment. You know, when I was growing up, there, like I said, there's four of us in my family. And my father, my first brother, this is the firstborn, he would always call him Martinez. That's our last name. And he'd be like, Martinez. He never called him by his first name. He was always a Martinez here, Martinez there. And I'd be like, what the fuck is he calling Martinez around here? In my young alcoholic mind, hypersensitive and shitty. And, you know, and then it was me. And he always called me by my first name. My father always called me by my first name. It was only Carlos. Carlos, Carlos, Carlos. And then there's my first baby sister, which they always said, oh, we were so glad when she was born because we really wanted a girl when you were born. But, you know, here you were. And I always thought, well, you know, you shouldn't have been wishing so hard, you know. And, you know, and there's things that happen. Like when I was 32 years old, I finally came out to my father. Can you imagine? I had to come out to my father. And then he was surprised. He had the fucking nerve to be surprised. And then I had to come back, and I told my therapist, I was like, you know what? I've been talking about how my daddy was not paying attention to me. I said, that shit was not made up. I was like, he really was not paying attention. So anyway, but so going back to the story with my siblings, so my baby sister, my other sister, you know, he was always my love, my little love, my amorcito, amor, amor, amor. He never called her by her name. She was always amor. Love, my love, my love, my love, my love. Because my father, in spite of all his flaws, is a very lovely man, you know. And then my baby sister is the baby. He only calls her Pierna, amor. So it was Martinez, Carlos, love, and baby. And I was like, why does everybody has a fucking special name? You know, what happened to me? So all this shit happens in, like I said, just about 5 years ago, you know, and did that. And he went back, and then my father gave me my special name. You know, after he went back, he started calling me, he calls me Hijo Lindo. He calls me my beautiful son. And, you know, and the only reason that he does that is because I've forgiven him completely from the bottom of my heart for not being able to give me what he could not give me, you know. And now every time I talk to him, he calls me Hijo Lindo. He calls me his beautiful son. And it's only because of the people of Alcoholics Anonymous and what you guys have taught me to do that that was able to happen, you know. And I was like 40 years old, and I was like, well, I finally got my nick, my special name. It took some fucking time, but at least it happened, you know. Because that's how I am. I'm never grateful for the good shit, you know. I always want to find, you know, I always want to find the other side. It's so alcoholic, you know. I always tell people, you know, there's no chapter to the cheerful in Miss Big Book, you know. There's a, you know, there's no chapter. Now to our cheerful members, you know. No. It's always like, now to our members who think that everything is just one big ball of shit going to hell, you know, and now to our doubtful members, and now there's a chapter to the agnostic, you know. But anyway, so that's the thing that's been that happened, you know, and it's been, and now, you know, just recently I went back home, and my parents celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary of their imperfect marriage, and I am not the person to judge them about their union, because they're forgiven each other and they've kept each other company now in their old age. And you know what I did? I threw a party for them. I threw a party for them. And I was the one that did it, because out of all my siblings, I'm the one that's been restored the most. You know, my older brother is a 50-year-old teenager. His wife ran off. They had a nice drunken brawl about a year or two ago, and she finally left. You know, now he lives in my parents' house. And, you know, and it's really interesting how that's happened. You know, I would not have been able to do that, and I don't know why. And, but, you know, I was like, okay, we're going to do this, you know, and then... And my life has been really fantastic. You know, I don't know why I've been so lucky, but, you know, I have an amazing life. You know, I work in this really amazing place, and I get to do really great things. I get to do what I love, you know, and they pay me well, and I'm respected, and they appreciate me, and I don't know how that happens. And the only reason that that happens is because, you know, people taught me how to work in Alcoholics. My sponsor taught me how to work. When I first moved to Los Angeles, I had this job. I was working for this guy, and I was like some little, you know, bitchy little young 25-year-old. Because you know how young gay guys are. It's a pain in the ass. You know, I go to the young people's meeting now in West Hollywood because I'm like, these young bitches need love. You know, and I do. I was like, they need somebody that's not going to try to get in their pants, and somebody just love them and hug them and tell them it's going to be okay, honey. God's got you. God's got you. And hug them and, you know, just be loving to them like you guys were loving to me. It's my job now. That's what I have to do. For the rest of my life, I have to do that. So as long as I can keep my sobriety, I'll do it. You know, but, you know, but the last couple of years have not been without challenges. You know, like, things have been rough. You know, the economy was horrible. A few years back, it got really dark. You know, my first two babies, those guys that I talked about, you know, they got sick and they died.